Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast. For the opening weekend, the main course, Omloop had newsblad, recaps of both the men and the women's race. Both really, really good races. The men's was on first, and then the women's, you get to see the live coverage of about the last hour and a half. And boy, nothing prepares you really for this, and how good, and the tactics and games in these races, and that they were both a pair of just outstanding additions with good weather conditions for that. Where were you? You're back in Belgium now, Benji. You flew in for this.
Yes, sir. I'm back in Belgium, partially for the classics, partially because my niece has her baptism thing tomorrow. So that was priority. The classics are very important as well, though. So I feel closer to the race. I can say that. I feel closer to the race. And it's still light outside after the race. Is that the big difference with the UK?
Oh, yeah, true. It's light here, but it was snowing all day today. I felt really appropriate, you know, appropriate for the classic season. But the men's edition, to remind you of the parkour, it's 202 kilometers long. The first 100 kilometers, they go, they sort of come from Gent, and then there's not too many cobbles or climbs at all. And really, that starts 100 k's into the race. But you can have crosswinds in that phase earlier, after about 50 kilometers. And then there's this climb after climb from that point onwards. The finish of this used to be the Tour of Flanders finish, and then they made the Tour of Flanders finish much, much harder. And you got the Hollenberg. The final starts on the Valkenburg. That's a 500 meter, 8% climb. And then after that, the Wolvenberg, 600 meter, 7%. And then the climbs are really tight together with the Molenberg, where Visma opened it up last year. The Berendries, a K, 7%. And then a bit of flat. And then the Moor, Kappelmoor, with 15 Ks to go or so, followed by the Bosberg shortly after, which, yeah, is before a flat run into the finish in Nineveh. Slightly like uphill kicker, I think, to the finish. So it's a good parkour, Benji, because it's not too hard. It isn't. It can still be a bunch sprint if wind conditions were, say, headwind, but we didn't have that today.
Exactly. And even today, the race itself, there's just so much into it when it comes to the variables of each group. And it started off early in the race. And I always feel like that's the case with Omloop. The fact that you never know if that peloton's going to come back in some shape or form, which teams are pacing in the peloton versus how many riders in the group ahead of that. And are there riders even ahead of that? Like, you got to keep in mind every single group when you're looking at this race. And I like that. It's not like you've got one rider riding away and you're like, okay, I feel like it's over. There was real tension throughout this race, and especially today, which that's why I love this today. And we got to start it. We got to start with how the race started. There was a breakaway of 9 riders, which is not little. That's a solid breakaway with some solid riders, like Lars Boven from Alpecin, Samuele Battistella, Goujard, De Pestel, Moro. That's the Movistar Trek dude, as in not the team Movistar Trek, but Movistar on the Trek, a rider that does well on the Trek. Anyway, Sean Flynn and Frank van den Broek. Was curious what Frank van den Broek was going to do, but that break didn't last for too long. Elias Maris and Jelle Vermolto, that's the 9-man breakaway. And behind, we saw Visma pacing, expected. They have Affini and basically no one else when it comes to the real rulers, unless they had to use one of their potential leaders for that. And then Ineos decided to pace. And you think that's a mistake? Because in my head, I'm like, if you're anyone but Visma, you want them to, well, you want them to basically not pace, because you want Visma to do all the work to force them to use one of their potential leaders as a domestique as early as possible. Or do you see it not as a major mistake here?
When I saw their start list, I knew they would do that, because it's a sunk cost fallacy. They're like, well, if we bring Wirth to the race, the only thing he can do is that role in this race. So he'll help pull. That's like, that's true. And same with Puccio, but that helps Visma lease a bike. who yep. trying to bring 6 liters and trying to protect 6 liters. So you kind of, you want a Feeney to burn all his bickies, and Little Trek didn't help with the clerk.
Yep.
And no one else did, I don't think. I mean, did it change the race massively? No.
No.
Ineos pacing or not, it's not the biggest deal in the world. It's just, I was surprised to see so much cooperation with Visma today.
Yeah, that's true. And obviously it was only Affini at the front, but Wirth at the front as well. And to me, it's once again that extra, like if this was a team doing this that didn't have historically poor tactics last year and so forth, then I'd say, okay, it's a one-off. But Ineos consecutively in so many races has like tactics that are less than you'd expect for a team like Ineos. A team with that budget should have people in the car that are like tactically like super competent in my head. And every now and then we see these moments where I'm like, ah, I would have done it differently. But hey, I'm obviously not that genius either. That being said, those two were pacing. But before we get to the echelons, how's your training going?
Well, yeah, we got 18 days, Benji, ourselves until our Classics Challenge. And Joint Cycling is preparing me for that. The best adaptive training platform and plan on the market. It's, you can go in, set your availability, adjust your availability, set your fitness level, set your FTP. And then if there's not one of the hundreds of specific events that there's a plan for around the world, so if you have doing the Marmot, doing a specific Gran Fondo, you can go in and select the plan for that rate or that event, and it generates a plan catered towards the demands of that event. Even if you don't have that, you can select, like I did, the Classics training plan or the one-day training plan, put in the kilometers, the meters, elevation gain, and bam, it spits out the appropriate training plan for you and your characteristics. If you want to check out Joint Cycling, which many of you already have, and it's so great to see so many of you training and using the training plans on the platform and enjoying it, if you want to get a 30-day free trial, use the link down below in the show notes. No credit card required whatsoever. And then after that 30 days, you'll even get an offer for a discounted 6-month subscription to Joint Cycling. So download it in the Google Play Store or the iPhone App Store today if you want to check it out, which I'm sure many of you will. Thanks to Joint Cycling for sponsoring this show and our opening weekend coverage. No coverage, though, of the race, Benji. This was the frustrating. This happens every year. I won't dwell on it too long, but it's frustrating. Oh, you will? Okay, go off.
For at least 15 seconds, I will rant about the fact that you'd expect Sportsout to be the first with live pictures, right? They weren't even the first. NOS in Netherlands was faster. Eurosport had live pictures earlier. And they just keep ranting on like, okay, I'm interested in what Jan Bakelands and Greg van Avermaet have to say, but not for half an hour before Omloop. I want to see the bloody race, especially when shit hits the fan. And shit was hitting the fan, because there was a segment in the earlier phase of today's race. Past Oudenaarde, we go upwards, northwards, and we had tell crosswind in certain areas. So the teams that did their research would know that the wind there would be relatively high, and that the area that the wind is coming from in an open area where the riders are could benefit for echelons. And I'll be honest, I still can't figure out perfectly at which KPH the wind is good enough for echelons or not, but teams should have been prepared that something could happen there, and someone decided to rush it, but it's off the broadcast, so I don't know which specific team decided to launch it. I'm guessing it's either Ineos or Visma, because they were the teams that were taking control before that moment happened, but it's impossible to know. And an echelon of 23 people opened, then what's your reaction of that?
Well, yeah, on the coverage, if they've not got the coverage planned for this moment, that's fine, whatever. The problem was also when the live coverage did start, they're still doing talk shows or interviews. Yeah. And it's like, really, no one cares. Like, you're putting the whole event on, you got Van Aert in G1, Dali in G1. You spend all morning doing the talk show. You know, that's fine. Yeah. People might watch it, but don't talk over the race. I was surprised to see that. Anyway, I'll put that to side. It just does shock me that sometimes we'll see 6 hours of Davide Baez in the breakaway in the Giro, and we don't get full Omloop coverage. I don't understand how that works. I know there's economics involved. The key thing that I saw when that G2 formed, Benji, because there still was the breakaway, was pretty much everyone's here. of the top favorites. Delis there with a teammate, Du Bois, correct me if I'm wrong. Philipson's correct. There with Gurgel and Bovers ahead. Peacock's there with three teammates, Rowe, Swift, Turner. Visma are there with five. Athene, Jorgensen, Van Aert, and Laporte. Can't remember who else, but no. And the only teams that really missed it, and I knew they would be chasing, were FDJ with Kung. Yeah. And they had Pithy handing out bid-ons, I think, today instead. So maybe he would have made G2. I dare say. Bahrain. And in the photo, I saw Wright and Fran Mihailovic were there with Visma when the echelon's starting to kick off. You can see they're putting it in the gutter. So I don't know how Bahrain missed it. They got Mohoric as well. Tratnik missed it. He was also there at the front. So maybe it was the rotation after and they got spat. I don't know. Yep. But it's... To be honest, when I saw that G2, I thought they're not actually going to go full Benji because like one and a half teams will chase behind and Visma don't... Like they got numbers, but every other favorite's there too. So why would they just kill two guys to pull Pidcock away?
I think the reason why everybody kept going, and I feel like Visma did most of the work with keeping it going from the pictures that I saw on Sporza as the live ticker was happening because broadcast wasn't there yet. Affini was still there. I think that's a major factor. Affini's not there in the initial part. They probably will feel a bit risky about continuing this. The fact that Ineos was there with four riders means that they will probably be willing to push this through because now it's 4 against 5 instead of having the teams that they initially have where you'd expect Visma to have a dominance over Ineos in its total. So Ineos with the numbers, probably paces. Little Trek with the numbers, probably paces, even though their main couple leader for this race, because I would have expected Stuyven to be the main man going into this race, because Milan is like the sprinty backup option, is not present here. So they missed it with Stuyven. They're still pacing, even though they have Hirsch, Milan, Squins. Spoilers, Squins would have a pretty good day afterwards. Yeah. And Tim de Klerk in this group. And maybe because Tim de Klerk is there as well, they also feel like that they have that option to keep riding here. When it comes to Lotto and Philipson's group, Alpecin, couldn't think of the team name for a second.
Quickstep,
I don't mind that they didn't ride as much. I think that's a good idea because other blocks have to take care of it.
I agree. It was good for Quickstep that Asgreen and Moscon were there. That's better than nothing. Like last year, better than missing it completely. But then I thought some strange things started happening. So they catch the breakaway.
Yeah, I was going to talk about the Wellens puncture.
Yeah, that's big for him.
I think the Wellens puncture might indirectly have changed quite a lot of this race.
Yes.
Because if Wellens stays in that group and he gets into the final into that eventual group, which he probably would have been in indeed.
The 7, he gets in, for sure.
That's an extra rider to go in against the numerical advantage of Visma, but also an extra rider to keep the group going. I generally think we've got a completely different race depending on whether Wellens punctures or not.
And some information at this moment on the race ticker was that Morgado abandoned the race.
Yeah.
So that also didn't seem to be the case later on. So that is an important moment. Affini also punctures out of that group. So it's now like the one dedicated Rouleau Domestique is no longer there for Visma Lisa bike. So they catch the breakaway. Big group. Alpecin got three riders. Some curious things start happening. Asgreen's rolling through and we see Lampard really pushing the group behind with FDJ. And Moscon's also looking really, really good in group one now. And I was like, why are Quickstep pushing behind? Are they trying to get Alaphilippe across? I didn't really understand that. Pacing both groups. Secondly, Van Aert was very active in this phase, pulling. Yep. Peacock pulled a bit and then he appropriately hid because he's got three domestiques. If someone wants to pull, Rowe can pull. And Benoit wasn't pulling in this phase at all. This is before the Wolvenberg. This is like, I don't know, was 70Ks to go, Benji?
Roughly.
Give or take in a sort of 20-minute phase there. Jorgensen is pulling a lot and Laporte is hiding a lot too. So I was like, why is Van Aert doing all the work? Maybe if he doesn't pull, then the group dysfunctions. I don't know. But that was something to note. De Lee was, I think, doing a pretty good job not doing more than his a fair share. But then there were some crashes behind Benji. I think FTJ went down with Kung.
Exactly. And Mohoric was stopped by the crash. And a lot of domestiques of teams that might be needed later would also be stopped by that crash. So that's another point in this race. This crash also probably hindered the group behind quite a lot. And that also might inflict a completely different race. So it's cycling. So these small things, it was a relatively big crash, to be honest. I think Sebastian Grignard was in it for Lotto and some other riders. I don't know who was involved, to be honest. I think Alaphilippe had some wounds already at this point. I don't know if it was this crash or one earlier in the race, but that crash caused the chase to be a smaller group. And like you said, FDJ was basically the leftover team in that front group after the crash, in like the front peloton behind the group of Van Aert and so forth. So FDJ was the team pacing then. So we've got FDJ pacing against the group that we have ahead. So that's a scenario I have with about, let's say it's about 60K to go. Eventually, Bahrain, you see moving back to the group 10Ks later. So that's 10 kilometers where Bahrain couldn't help the pace because Mohoric was behind, for example. So that's also stuff that happened. But I feel like the next phase of the race where something really hit the fan was the Wolvenberg. And it's these small moments, because in the run into the Wolvenberg on the Valkenberg already, I feel like Ineos at the start of the Valkenberg was coming to the front to start pacing a bit higher to put some pressure on the group and drop some baggage in the group. And then it was Moscon attacking with Laporte following the wheel. I'll be honest, I'm not a fan of Moscon as the history he has as a person, but I was pretty bullish on the transfer and the dude delivered today. Like, he didn't stay in that group for the entire race, but he was better than every single other Quickstep rider in the race.
Yeah, I mean, great transfer, like by low, and you could get a guy who nearly won Roubaix 2 years ago, not that long ago. Yeah. So he was super strong today. He just rode really bad, like really not smart. Like, he was being the initiator and really the wrong phase, because Visma suddenly disappeared from the front. Laporte starts just following moves and Moscon's pushing. And then bam, all of a sudden, second Hollerweg, Jorgensen's at the front driving it. Yeah. And it's like Moscon's just spent his bickies right before Visma about to probably launch something. And then that's what happens on the Wolvenberg, is that Visma try to thin that group completely. Yeah, like Lars Bover was already dropped at this point, but they're trying to get it down to, you know, 3-6, 3-7, 2-5. Rather than 4-25, so, or 4-30, which is what it was. And that's what happens. They get that group. I think, what was the group at that point, Benji?
It still had quite a bit of rise. Like, De Buist was still involved, Philipsen was still involved when the Wolvenberg hit the starting point. And when Jurgensen and Van Aert made that move, De Lee was close on the wheel and you started seeing rider by rider dropping in the background. And the first things I noticed was Ineos was starting to be dropped off the back. Pidcock was literally isolated by the last 25% of the Wolvenberg. So then I was like, okay, this changes the front group, because now you don't have those two teams against each other. It's going to be Visma versus the rest from this point onwards in this group. And then the group started getting deteriorated even more with, I don't know who made the move, because I think there were like 10-ish riders at the top, but there was like a bit of a continued run, continued percentage upwards on top, which meant that whoever made that eventual move, it's probably a Visma rider, to be honest, but that eventually led to a group of, I think, 7 riders. Yes, Van Aert, Laporte, Jorgensen, Pidcock, De Lee, Moscon, and Squins. And Moscon, you said he was in trouble before already, but this was the point where he would start getting in trouble probably. Properly.
Yeah, he fully blew. Like, I think he dropped when they were just pulling on like a false flat next time. He just full cracked.
I think it was Carter, actually.
Yeah. So he went over his limit. Asgreen was already dropped on the Wolvenberg move, so he didn't have that bounce back. Alaphilippe, freshly shaven. I swear he crashed twice or three times today, poor guy. Yeah. So he crashed multiple times. Not a good day for him. More Quickstep in the end. And Schoens has lost Milan, and he's lost De Klerk, and so he's also on his own, although he's got Milan behind the peloton. Mate, at this point. Oh yeah, sorry.
He's got Milan behind, but he's also got diamonds, and we're about to see that.
He's got diamonds in the legs, but the peloton at this point, I got to be honest, I thought this group starts relaying. Yeah. Eventually, Jumbo pull maybe 3-4 minutes, and then eventually they get a pull out of Schoens. They get a pull out of Pidcock. It starts relaying. I'm looking at Group Two in shambles. FDJ already been pulling for 20 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour. Bahrain don't know where they are. And I'm like, Peloton's gone. We're never going to see them again. That's what I thought at that moment when that Wolvenberg move and then the following splits happen. I thought, they're never coming back. And then I would say this group cooperates for a little bit, Benji. There's some no major moves from Visma, but there's some Jorgensen and Laporte go with the Schoens, and then Van Aert loses the wheel just 5 meters and Pidcock has to close it. Pidcock seemed to get flicked a lot in this phase. The lead didn't too much.
I feel like they both were kind of getting flicked every now and then, and there were just so many moments where I saw either was Pidcock or Schoens going off a bit, and then one Visma rider in the wheel, and then I was like, okay, so now the Liam Pidcock are stuck behind with two other Visma riders. Who's going to close it down? Then Pidcock starts to bridge that. So they always had to solve the problem after the gap was created. Every now and then, indeed, Pidcock was caught behind a few times, but also the Lee in those phases, in my opinion. And there were some attempts, like on the Jacare, like you said, from Laporte and so forth, but it really came down to the Molenberg where I was like, okay, is something going to happen here? Because now, if you got to look at the teams tactically, Visma, the gap is still 1 minute in the ticker on the left top, roughly. Yep. So if you're Visma, are you already on the Molenberg going to split up the group, knowing that that's going to probably increase the chances that the group that's on 1 minute going to start pacing harder? Or will you wait to start rolling attacks on the others in the group until you get over the Berendries and the Elvenenberg, for example? So I was looking at that phase as okay, I might not actually expect to move on the Molenberg from Visma at this point. And it was Schoens that went to the group, to the top in the group, in the front.
So Dalia and Pidcock had basically, from what I've seen, been bullied into just cooperating. Because the thing is, you either pull 16% of the time at a steady pace between the climbs, or you're going to get attacked. And I think Dalia made the correct, you made the correct decision. Just pull for 3 seconds through and not have to solve that problem. And then maybe you can be the best on the climbs. That's why when you're like, why would these riders work with Visma? Why would they work with Visma? Because you're going to get attacked.
Or you have to.
You have to. Schoens was the one who he was saying, no, I'm not pulling initially. He was really conserving his energy. And then bam, he goes on the Berendries and he's got a gap.
I want to mention before you mention that, you just said Schoens went on the Berendries. But if we looked at the Molenberg before that, when Schoens paced to the top, Pidcock was on a bit of a gap, and that goes into what I feel like I have to say about the Berendries, where, yes, Schoens made that move. Wout van Aert was the one responding to Schoens, and he responded a bit later, which means that there was a bit of a gap to close. But then Dalí started looking at Pidcock, and I think at this point, he might not have seen that Pidcock was in trouble on the Molenberg, but that was the wrong thing to do, because then he had to respond a bit too late, which means he spent more energy closing the gap to Van Aert, who seemed to have trouble closing Schoens. And mate, I was shocked.
Yeah, Schoens looked incredibly strong on the Berendries. And the Berendries is not cobbled, correct me if I'm wrong. It's a fast climb, but no, it's good on this sort of climb. Pidcock should be good on this sort of climb. Schoens was very good on this sort of climb. It suits these guys with 2 minutes who aren't the heavy classics guys, the super heavy guys. And so yeah, Schoens was really, really strong. And the race already flipped here, Benji, where I was like, if Schoens is good enough to drop them and one of Pidcock or Dalí join him, Visma could be gone. It's like when one guy attacks on a mountaintop finish and a team has looked like there's an illusion of strength. They've got five guys, they're pacing, and then just with one attack, they look bad. I thought, are they...
Example.
Or was Van Aert just not trying to accelerate too much and he thought, I'll just catch him. What is he going to do, a 50K solo?
It felt like the moment on Granon when Micah went to the front and all the Jumbo domestiques started dropping. I was like, wait, this flips the table. Schoens being this good. Because at this point, I was like, from all the people in this group, who would I want to give this victory to the most? I think Schoens would have been
an
epic bloody winner at this race. But if that happens or not, we'll continue onwards. And after the Berendries, we Well, first of all, Pidcock once again gets slightly gapped on the Berendry, so he clearly had something missing to follow every single one of the attacks. And then we get to the Alverenberg, which is like the last climb before the Muir, and there's like a 10-ish kilometers, 12, 15 kilometers, roughly, flatter section between that climb and the Muir van Gerardsbergen. And that's where I was like, okay, this is the moment where I'd expect a Visma to start rolling attacks, and they started doing that. And from the Lees perspective and from Pidcock's perspective and from Squin's perspective, now it's important that they just have to respond to everything.
Well, eventually they can't respond to everything. And I think what they decided was, there's three riders here. Two of them, if they go solo here, you probably won't see again. Laporte and Van Aert. If you give them 25 seconds, you probably won't see them again. But Jorgensen, they're like, we have to pick our poison. You have to eventually let one go. You cannot for 12 kilometers get counted before the Muir over and over and over and over and over. And I think Van Aert went once. De Lee was on him. I think if probably in hindsight, Visma could have gone with Van Aert again in this phase. And what was clear as well, Benji, was they can't wait for the Muir. If they just roll turns to the Muir, De Lee might just ride away. Schoens might just ride away. So, and Pidcock, you're right. Like, he looked like he was like, if he had an energy bar, he was like losing a linear amount every climb to the point of, you know, zero. But in this phase, Jorgensen counters just over a crest, zero reaction. De Lee and Schoens like, no, not our problem. We don't know it at this point watching live. But Jorgensen goes clear, very similar to Van Baarle, who did after Molenberg. The peloton behind must have gained all their time in this flat run-in. They must have gained so much time back, because G2 stops, basically.
Every year. Every year this happens, and it comes to the point that you see that 1 minute at the top, and suddenly you see them in the background of your video image when everybody starts turning up
to
the Muir.
I was like, what the fuck?
I was like, there's a rider there. There was no rider there. And like, to set the standards, to set the stakes at the bottom of the Muir, Jorgensen has a gap of roughly 20, 25 seconds, if I remember from mine.
Very similar to Van Baarle last year.
Exactly. And then behind that, there was a supposed gap of 1 minute, but then suddenly Wellens was literally behind them, like on the
Vestin
of the Muir.
Morgado did big work closing that down, pulling and chasing.
Morgado, who abandoned the race at the start, apparently, but suddenly showed up in the race again. So maybe they did the substitution that we... They did the substitution that we expected them to do on the one day.
Maybe.
But no, on a serious note, then I was like, this changed the game completely again. So we've had so many bloody plot twists in this race, and that's what made today's Omloop so bloody special. And when the climb started, I expected, okay, the people in the group of Squins, De Lee, and so forth, the riders that are not Visma need to keep pacing on the Muir as hard as they can to the top to get as close as possible to Jorgensen as possible, and hope that fresh blood joins them while climbing the Muir. And that was happening because Wellens was starting to close down, and by the top of the Muir, everything was so close together. Jorgensen had 8 seconds according to Race Radio, 14 according to the graphic on the left top, but it looked like 8 seconds to me.
And he looked like he was blowing too.
Yeah. And De Lee...
Well, I thought in this phase, well, like, De Lee goes on the Muir. He goes super hard. He doesn't drop Van Aert and Laporte. So Van Aert, who looks suspect on the Berendries, him and Laporte actually look pretty solid on the Muir. De Lee wasn't getting rid of them. And then I thought, with the peloton pressure behind, and by the way, this wasn't like 10 riders. This is a full peloton who 90% of the riders have been sitting in the wheels for the last 2 hours. I was like, if Laporte or Van Aert, they got to go again before the Bosberg. Because Jorgensen's not keeping this gap, because Wellens, Benji, he was a man on a mission. He was just like, he really injected some impetus into that chase group, because De Lee, Pidcock, and Schoens were kind of defeated. They're like, oh, we've just been rolled by Visma for an hour now. And Wellens was like, bang, on the front, chasing into that false flat fast downhill. Laporte gets on his wheel. And we're thinking, oh, are they going to go away? Closed down by Schoens or De Lee. And so it's basically a full regroupment with Jorgensen starting the Bosberg 5 seconds ahead.
Yeah.
And Ivan Garcia Cortina attacks over the top for Movistar.
From the death.
Nzue does not forget Matteo. Attacks over the top on the Bosberg, and yeah, goes past him and Van Aert. Like, holy fuck, he has to get onto his well. And then they have a gap, and we're thinking, who is in this? Who is in group two? Who is in the peloton now? There could be anybody here. They've got Garcia Cortina attacking.
And the Bosberg made a really big difference here because it causes that peloton that's storming towards his front to split apart once again. And we see what's very important. Lotto Domestiques in the last three positions of the entire group. So those are the riders that Adelie would need if any attacks start forming right now. And we get over this segment. We got a group of, let's say 20 is my pure guess. 20, 25. The likes of a Paul and a Tratnik and so on have joined this group. And the Lee's still in that group, but he's solo. Wout van Aert, Laporte, all those riders are still in there. So now I'm like, okay, Kung's back as well. We're going to see attacks here. And I think
Dylan
we saw
van
a few.
There?
Yeah, we saw a few moves here. I don't remember who before the eventual decisive attack, but I think Kung went off for a little bit, or was he the one chasing an attack?
I'm not sure. All I can remember is the big Jan Tratnik move. And yeah. It just goes to show how much you don't want to go to the finish with De Lee after last year. Because Jumbo got six riders here, or five riders, yeah. And Van Aert and Laporte. They could just set up a lead out here. It's a flat run in. There's no Philipsen. It's basically just De Lee and Tratnik goes. And Niels Pollitt, he like tacks onto it. Really impressive attack. It reminded me of him winning that Tour de France stage in 21, where just on this last drag, he just cooked, I think, right on Imanol Erviti.
Yep.
And he's on UAE now, his first big classic for UAE. And they got no sprinter. And he goes with Tratnik. And then this was a really complicated run in Benji. There's a lot of questions here. It's like, does Tratnik relay? Do Visma chase? Do Visma counterattack again? Will Niels Pollitt stop pulling? Who is going to chase behind if Visma don't help?
And the difference happens when the third group comes to the second group, being led by, I think, Brent van Moor, who storms straight through that chasing group to the front and starts pacing that. And basically, I think it was a three-man Lotto train there. Brent van Moor, Kampenaerts, and Bullens was there as well. And they started pacing like crazy with a gap of 16 seconds on the left up, I'm pretty sure. And now we've got a two-man fight at the front, Tratnik and Pollitt, against Lotto Destiny. And I think that was kind of it. There was Uno Wex rider as well. I think Tiller was also doing the work. So both of those teams were trying their best to try and close this down. And it was like, how many kilometers are we to go at this point? Seven? Eight?
Seven, yeah. And so what basically happens is, Tratnik refuses to relay while the gap is created and while the Lotto Destiny Domestiques are working full gas, and they got three guys, I think. So Lotto chasing full, and this is really important for the finish. Pollitt does all the work to hold that gap stable against three guys for like 3, 4, 5 kilometers. Really cooks himself here. And you can see Tratnik's freewheeling. The size difference is comical in his wheel on this far section too. And then eventually it gets to the point where, and I didn't also know the answer, where it's like, if Pollitt pulls this much, yeah, he's bigger. He might, in theory, he will have a bigger absolute 5 second and 10 second power than Tratnik because of his size in a sprint finish. But like, if he has to do this much pulling, Tratnik can take his chances. And then it got to the point where looked like Lotto were coming back. Tratnik eventually relays a little bit. But I think Lotto, it's like, if you hold the gap stable, Benji, as the lead group, you're actually winning. Obviously, that's a very obvious statement. You're winning because the Domestiques are burning off behind.
Yes, you're also burning off at the front.
True.
But it also depends on whether you then start looking at each other in the last kilometer, which in this case they didn't, because Pollitt just kept on storming through until they hit 250 meters to go. Then you've got a sprint between the two riders, and Jan Tratnik comes out of the wheel of Pollitt in the last 200 meters, and Pollitt just has to sit down. Tratnik keeps going, and we see in the background that it wasn't going to be for the peloton. They were too late, and Jan Tratnik wins for Visma Lisebike. How many years in a row did they win now? Three?
3 years, yeah.
That's a good streak, and with three different riders, a different rider every time, they had the team to to win with six potential riders. It was Tratnik that did it. And I got to be honest, I kind of saw a Classics win for Tratnik coming because February, he was so bloody good.
Yeah, he's in Classic Iron, he was incredible. And Mercia behind O'Connor, he was really good. And now he gets the win here. I must say, when that group, when the echelon was created and then the group of seven went, if you then told me Jan Tratnik and Nils Pollard are going to win solo, I would say, how? So that's why this race was so exciting, I guess, because it just completely turned on its head before the Mur. And you're left scrambling like this complete plot twist of you expect, oh, Visma are going to play their numbers and they're going to go away with one of them on the Mur and he's going to go solo and they're going to get protected behind. And then all of a sudden, is this going to be a sprint? I thought it was a really, really exciting last hour of this race. And if you might be wondering, why did Pollitt pull? I don't think... I could tell that Tratnik was going to win maybe with 2.5 Ks to go. Because he came to the front, he took a pull, and he looked really confident. And he pulled, and Pollitt wasn't like straight on the wheel. He was like really struggling. And I thought, Pollitt's already cooked himself here. And then you get to the finish, and it's like, yeah, Pollitt could have surplused. He had a little bit of margin because they won by 8 seconds in the end. But he got no sprinter behind. He's had no Classics results since Roubaix on Katusha.
Yes.
He just got, you know, people, previous team managers maybe saying he was overpaid at UAE. Second is better than 35th in the sprint behind. And they got no sprinter behind. Wellens ain't coming fifth.
Overpaid at... Oh, his previous manager is saying that he was overpaid now at UAE or so. Yeah, in that way. And I fully agree. In hindsight, you could say he had some leftover. But if you're in the race, if you're a dad rider, you don't know how close they are. Like, you might hear some screaming in your ear saying, oh, it's that many seconds. And they're probably saying, watch out. probably making you more nervous in like some way. So I completely understand that he kept on riding because second is the best result UAE could have gotten from this point onwards, keeping in mind that he didn't know how close the other group was in my head. Because in the group, they weren't going to win. Like you said, they don't have that sprinter. And it's not like Wellens can re-attack in the last 500 meters. So I see it that way. When it comes to the group behind, I think there was a moment with 2K to go where I spotted, I think it was Berlin sitting next to the Lee in like, because he moved back from the train at the front because they probably wanted to like place him for the sprint, which... That's an interesting one because I was thinking through this, and if you're Lotto in this situation, do you say to Berlens, put Dili in a good position because next to the victory, we also need to think about UCI points? Or do you say, which this is the thing I would have gone for, which they eventually also did, is Dili, you find your position yourself, and Berlens goes to the front and starts spacing again. They did that. With like 1.2, 1.3K to go. But then the thing you need to think about is, who do you put the lead in then when it comes to positioning? Because
you just got to take your chances.
If you then say, who's got most riders here? Okay, Visma has the most riders for a lead out. But Visma will only start doing their lead out if Tratnik is caught.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically you're choosing between racing for the win or UCI points if Fanat is the one you're trying to follow. In your solo positioning fight.
I think Quickstep did it properly in Kerner in 2022. They spent all of Jakobsen's lead out chasing the breakaway in Kerner that year, and he won the sprint behind on his own. You just have to risk it because if you don't catch them, newsflash, you don't win. And I think they wanted to win. I don't think Dali's thinking about coming third for points. He wants to win. And to UAE's point as well, Wellens was top three strongest guy in this race last year. You know where he came? 26th. And he was top three strongest in the race last year.
Yep.
And so I can understand. And also, by 500 meters to go, Pollitt already knew he was not going to win. He already knew. There's no way he didn't think he's pulled full gas for 10Ks with Tratnik largely. So it's too late at that point. And if you surplus at 1K, you just get caught. So I don't really blame what he did at all. And big win for Tratnik. In the sprint behind, Laporte seemed to do like a reverse lead out. Which was probably the right thing to do because they didn't know where Tratnik was. And then Van Aert jumped, I think, when he saw Tratnik winning, or he just jumped, got into the slipstream, and then came third behind Pollitt. Oliver Naassen, a good result. Fourth, I dare
consistency.
Say.
Consistency.
Well, Decathlon, that bike, man, that bike must be good.
I swear he does it every year, no? We got to take a look. I want to dive into this for a second. Fourth this year.
Last year he was ratcheting in the classics.
19th. And then the year before, fourth. Then in 2021, he was 19th. He gets 19th and fourth every single time, just switched around. Oh, seventh the year before.
Decathlon are back. They are, Decathlon, are they a top five best team in the world? That's food for thought. No, I'm kidding, but they are seriously, they will a completely different team this year.
Yeah.
I dare say he might even come third if there was space on the barrier there. But still, after a very nervous race, I'll read out the full top 10. Tratnik, Pollitt, 8 seconds back, Van Aert in third, Naas in fourth, Laporte fifth, Lawrence Rex, a very nice result, in sixth after Binnie was, you know, too cold for him. Stuyven seventh, Pidcock eighth, Trentin ninth, and De Lee 10th. That Pidcock eighth beating De Lee is like surprising after being sort of really, really struggling in the last few climbs. So still had a good sprint. I would say, yeah, just a good race overall, Benji. It's Visma end up with 1-3-5.
Yeah.
But on the Bosberg, it would have been looking that good. Or maybe it was. Maybe everything that happened before allowed what happened to happen later.
Nothing was lost in the race at any point for Visma. They were always in the running for the win, which you'd also kind of expect if you got six potential leaders in this race.
Yeah, but I think people thought Van Aert, after all that before, was just going to power away on the Mur, you know?
Well, after his weaker moment behind Squins, I didn't see that anymore. So that was really the change in my head from that point onward. So I even thought that Laporte might be better to do that than Van Aert after that moment, because Laporte hadn't shown that weakness yet before. And when it comes to Tratnik, it's interesting because is it the second year in a row where the groups merge together and a Visma rider counters that wasn't in the original split?
Yeah, that's what happened with Van Baarle after the Molenberg. He wasn't in the front 10 riders. I don't know how far back he was, but I would like to know, like, were the... It seemed like, Benji, that actually being in the group behind was an advantage in the end. Like, Garcia Cortina attacking on the Bosberg, fresh. Wellens being in the wheels, and then, bang, he's fresh for the Mur and smashing it. And whereas, like, the front group are just... They've been working each other over and knocking each other's... You know, trying to throw punches for the last hour and a half.
From a tactical perspective, if you take a look at races where you've got a rider in the front, for example, and the rider can sprint. For example, if you're Wout or if you're De Lee in those races, let's say Wout was on a weaker team. Like De Lee is the perfect example for my taker, actually. So if you've got De Lee in the front group and it starts going wrong when Jorgensen goes off the front, is there a moment that he should start already thinking about starting to even perhaps pace behind? Because that's also a risk, eh? Because like then you might be fucking yourself over if the front group then catches Jorgensen again before the move. But on the other hand, you're also potentially helping yourself by catching that group before the move.
Should the other teams like Trek have paced with Skoens? I mean, Skoens looks so good, he almost looked like he'd ride away. The interesting thing here is, though, with it all coming back together, is that like if Van der Poel had been here and he comes in that group to the Mur, he just rides away, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
And so that's why it's kind of a dichotomy in that it worked out for Visma in the end. They had the numerical advantage. They did play the cards right. But then if you have Van der Poel, who's like Skoens, but obviously a little bit better, it really throws comparison. A spanner in the works. Yeah. Well, Skoens he's always good in hard races.
Yeah.
He's always good in hard. He's really, really good rider. And I like that he was active too. I like that he was like, you know what, Baron, I'm not waiting for you guys just to roll me on the front and attack you on the Berendries. And he doesn't get a good result in the end. He finishes 27th, but he was really, really good today. Really exciting edition of Omloop, Benji. Anything else we learned?
Everything else we...
Quickstep don't look good.
Yes, I agree with that take. But Moscon looks good. And I would sign him up for Roubaix when it comes to potentially having a good result there as well. I would say that the Lee is much better than I saw before in February. So his sprint at Almeria, I was like, meh. High-end, he dropped too early. So I was like, he might not actually be that great at Omlo, but he showed up and he was really good here. Visma is still on point. I think we need to.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You put that as one of the big ones, as well as they arrived with six riders that could potentially win the race. And they ended up winning the race, and they were in a winning position, a potentially winning position, for most of the race. Yeah, you said it. There was one moment where we were like, eh, this could go wrong. But it was still a moment where they could still win because they still had three riders in the group.
So, yeah, the worst thing for them is like Jorgensen gets caught with 2Ks to go.
Yes.
It's actually
that's a problem.
It's better that he gets caught in the Bosberg, because then you're like, you got space to work, which what Tratnik did. I'll say Dylan Van Baarle's positioning, that seems to still be an issue for them.
Yeah.
For sure. He didn't make that split when he should be. So Decathlon looked very, very good. Like they were either 4th and 11th, very, very good. And I thought Pidcock was good, and I think he's going to be really good in the Ardennes. These cobble climbs with these big boys, like turning a big gear, is really tough for him. And then getting flicked on the flat at 60Ks by Laporte on like these fast run-ins, he just is at such a disadvantage given his size. So I thought Pidcock was good today and did the best he could, really. I don't really know what he could have done too much differently, frankly. He had to play the hand he was dealt.
Yep.
But yeah, that's the men's omelet, Benji. Kerner tomorrow, I think we might have another good race. I don't know the wind conditions, but Dalí's not doing it. That's a bit of a shame, I think.
I agree.
It is what it is. Pithy's in, so maybe Pithy can be Dalí.
Now Dalí can show up for Le Samar next week and hopefully cook that race, because
that makes no sense for me. Makes no sense. If we saw the group nearly coming back for a sprint in Omloop today, tomorrow there's 70Ks, 60Ks of flat to the finish. So,
what do you think when it comes to Philipsen tomorrow? Because he was good until the...
Nah, he got ruined on the climbs. He was good in because he's good at crosswind rider on the flat. And the second they got to the climbs...
But Kroone is less hilly, eh?
The climbs are longer.
But they're going to open it up on the
climbs
on the hills,
are longer.
That's true, but...
No, he's a good rider. Like, he can win Dwars Dour, for sure. If I was Alpecin, I'd just go for the sprint. I think it's actually a risk to put Philipsen ahead. He'll get blown up, and then you're left with a gap.
Just keep pacing the chasing group the entire bloody day.
Yep, and maybe Antimarché with Binny or Trek with Milan will help you. Like,
I think so too.
10 domestiques against a group of four can do it. We'll just draw a bow on the men's race there. In the women's race, this was also a very good addition. Coverage started after the men's race. It has the same final. So from the Molenberg onwards, the Wolvenberg onwards, it's the same as the men's race, 127Ks. Didn't seem like it had the same crosswind action early pre-coverage, Benji. Mm-hmm. But SD Works took control, right?
Yeah, SD Works took control during the race, but there was one interesting move, and there were multiple interesting moves, but for me, obviously, once we switched from the men's race to the women's race, is about 50K left in the race, and the first move I saw was a move by Longo Borghini, which was behind the breakaway. So, original breakaway of the day, Gafinovits Magajajes, Jesus, I ruined that name, Magajajes, something like that. Maaike Collier, Marieke de Groot, and Marieke Meerts. And that five-women breakaway actually played some role, because with 44K to go, Longo Borghini attacked from the Peloton-ish group relatively early in this race, and she decided to jump towards the breakaway and eventually drop them throughout the Berendries-Elverenberg segment of the race. So we're talking 35, 30-ish kilometers to go at this point. And then in the peloton, in that same phase, stuff was also hitting the fan because his D-Works kept on pacing, but it was in two different ways for me, you know? Because, like, we had moves from other teams, and then Wibbs would respond. And then suddenly we would see Kopecky and Vollering at the front as well. So I'm expecting that before the broadcast started, we probably saw, or we probably missed seeing, like, was it Femke Markus as well for his D-Works in this race? We might have not seen her already pacing before that moment. Because I felt like when the broadcast started, the SD-Works group, well, the peloton with the SD-Works riders was already a bit reduced, you know?
And most importantly, Marlon Reusser was not in the race.
Yep.
And I really feel like she wouldn't have paced necessarily, but I think she goes with ELB and goes with that move. But she wasn't here. So I think what SD-Works basically wanted to happen was, and the right thing, keep ELB on like a reasonable gap. If it starts to really no one's pulling, okay, Vollering pulled a little bit, but Puck Peterson was pulling on Phoenix de Koenig. She was far too generous helping SD-Works with their problems. She was pulling, but at least she had good legs. I'm not sure if you've gone through the full group. They catch the breakaway. That is group two.
I didn't.
Oh, so the ELB gets the breakaway, drops them immediately. She's looking. She's very strong. I rode past her, past my house, actually. So she'd been in Andorra. This was someone else in an Italian national champs kit. So she'd been training up here. And she goes clear. Mariana Voss for Visma Lisa bike. Not a great classic campaign last year. She's in that group. Talita de Jong, Michael Kolger, Magalhães, Gafinovits, Mert, as well as Sheeran van Anroy, protecting. She's not going to ride with ELB ahead. Kasia Nevyedova, Wiebes, Vollering, Kopecky, Peterson. So it all looks still kind of on control for SD Works. They got numbers. They got the world champ. She rode away from everybody like they were nothing on the Mur last year or before. It still looks pretty well in control, right?
Yep. It looks in control. And my question was going to be, that group has formed, but what's going to happen before the Mur? Who's going to be pacing in that group? Because you mentioned the names and SD Works is there and Kopecky, Vollering, Wibbs, they have to choose between a potential leader to start the pacing. And they do that. I feel like Vollering was doing most of the work towards the Muur van Gerardsbergen with Wibbs and Kopecky kind of in the group. Keep in mind that every now and then we've seen a Kopecky and a Vollering on the climbs before, already at the front of the group, kind of hammering it as well. So
and
they've all done a bit of a share. Go ahead.
Important note, and maybe why that happened, was because when ELB went, Vollering tried to do what I said Reusser would have done, and she didn't get there. She tried to go across to ELB on the flat, and she kind of not blew up, but she shaspatted and came back to the group. So maybe she was like, I don't got it, because if I'm not closing her down here, I don't got it for the Mur coming up. So I guess that was actually good tactics and good communication. So credit where credit's due, in that they immediately transitioned to managing the ELB gap, because I still thought, as long as they keep this reasonable, Kopecky's going to nuke the Mur and we're good. Or they're good.
And I feel like at this point we're talking about the women's edition of Omloop for not too long, because we're now already at the Mur. We see Nevyedova coming to the front on the Vesten of the Mur, trying to
too
put
early.
A bit of a tempo. I agree, it's too early. I expected her to do it on like the steeper segment of the climb, but she starts it on the Vesten, and then you are just waiting, right? I'm just waiting. Kopecky's basically in the wheel. When is she going to go? When we hit that steep segment, the actual Kapellmuur segment of the Muur van Gerardsbergen, and Kopecky goes, Vos is in the wheel. Van Anroy was also there, and she was closing in quite a bit. Longa Borghini is getting caught as we're doing this. So she's there as well, and she just about makes it over the top with these four riders. Nevyedova's not there, so she went early.
Yeah.
That might have cost her in the end, perhaps.
She went on the wrong moment.
She kind of missed something to be able to follow these four on the actual Kapellmuur section, the steep segment. Then I feel like we've spoken about that part of the race now. I feel like the most interesting part is yet to come.
Yeah, it was a really interesting final. I thought the tactics... And first of all, when I saw Van Anroy and Voss not immediately off the wheel of Kopecky, I was like, we might have a classic season that's better than last year. Because which I've been praying for, because that's if you listen to our SD Works preview, like they were the best team by far last year, and I expected what I saw from Trek today. I sort of expected that last year.
Okay.
Where, yeah, they don't have Capecchi, but they can, they got numbers. They got a lot of good riders. And I was like, and Voss as well, she was half wheeling. She looked good. She looked in really in good shape. She'd already, I'm pretty sure she already won this season. No, she did win, sorry, but she was good in some other stages in Valencia a couple of weeks ago or a week ago. And I was like, ooh, if Capecchi hasn't dropped them on the Mur, then dropping them on the Bosberg's not a formality either.
Yep.
And then we got this run into the Bosberg. Trek, I think, have two phases for me in this final.
Yep.
There's one phase where they sort of don't know what to do and they just pace really hard. And I thought, please, this is before the Bosberg, right after the
phases.
Mur. Yeah, true. And I thought, with ELB and Van Aroy just start pacing and the two sprinters, Capecchi and Voss, are just sitting in. And I thought, what the hell is going on here? This is like, I'm back in Australia and my world's upside down. But I think they were just establishing the gap, maybe not wanting Vollering to come back.
Potentially, maybe they want the gap to be significant enough to make sure no SDWorks riders are near. Because at this point, I have no clue where Wibbs is either. Like, Vollering, Wibbs, kind of expected Wibbs to be closer at this point, not going to lie, because she became more versatile last year. And today, I feel like that was kind of missing when I expected it to be there, even though she got far into Omlo, but I expected her to be closer on the Muur van Gerardsbergen. And you're right, that phase on the Bosberg, Capecchi made that move, Voss follows, Van Androy just holds on, Longoborghini's in trouble, but she returns just after the Bosberg. So we've got the same group that we started the Bosberg with. We just noticed some weakness when it comes to Longoborghini, and also a tiny bit when it comes to Van Androy, because she only just held on to the front two riders. So we know Capecchi and Voss are the strongest. We know that Capecchi could drop Voss on the Muur van Gerardsbergen, and we know that Van Androy is a slight bit weaker and Longoborghini has spent quite a bit of effort, so that might come her costly. And then we see the phase where he goes to phase two.
I thought that was a huge risk from Trek.
Yep.
To not anticipate before the Bosberg. What if Capecchi just rides away? And she nearly did from Van Androy. Now, maybe the two sprinters, maybe the two sprinters don't relay with each other and then you come back, okay? That maybe that's like the IQ meme and I'm the one in the middle, and actually the far right one is knowing that the 180 IQ is knowing that actually the two sprinters won't relay. But I thought one of them should have anticipated in the flat before the Bosberg.
I'm not sure about that. I think of it in the way of anticipating before the Bosberg will make it so that whoever the leftover Trek rider is that is stuck with Capecchi and Voss will be attacked by them on the Bosberg. And the chance of the Trek rider ahead being caught by the person that attacks on the Bosberg would be big in my head.
Yeah,
because
I was just seeing very uncooperative vibes between Capecchi and Voss. Yeah. Those two were not immediately snapping onto any wheels. Like when Pogacar was with Van der Poel and Wout in the E3 final, he didn't get any breathing space. He attacked, bang, they're just like on his wheel. Here I was seeing more breathing space. But after the Bosberg, Benji, that's where Trek really started to work well.
Yes, that is correct. They switched to phase two, the phase two you mentioned, which is rolling attacks on the other riders, which is the go-to strategy. Yes, they've showed some weakness on the Bosberg, but they're still trying. 10K to go, Longoborghini is the first one to attack. Capecchi responds. Voss kind of looks at Van Androy for a bit, and Van Androy starts closing it, and then Van Androy does her elbow, and then Voss does the last bit. So you see that Voss is also tactically like trying to eat the plate of her competition before she's eating her own plate. I don't even know if that was the right expression, but we'll take it. And that's how it comes back together. And then a few kilometers later, we get the exact same scenario. 6K to go. Van Androy is the next one. She goes. Voss reacts with Capecchi in the wheel. And Longoborghini's on a bit of a gap, so it's kind of like they're rolling attacks, but the second rider of Trek is also kind of being attacked because she's having trouble to follow the other two. You know? It's like the perfect scenario is that it can follow the other riders, but it's still okay, you're right.
Well,
but it kept going, eh?
The problem is the other two, they have that snap that when they sprint to close it, and that's why Capecchi was, I guess, doing that, the yeah, they just don't have that snap to stay in the wheel. I guess they can count on, at least when the other rider's caught, they can come back with momentum. And that kept on happening. And so Capecchi's closed a few. Van Vos has closed maybe one. Van Nistelrooy goes hard. Vos immediately, she knew it was coming, sprints into the wheel. Capecchi doesn't close it. Looks at ELB for a second. And that's when I was like, Vos is going to win. And not in the way she eventually does. Spoiler alert. She goes with Van Nistelrooy. And I'm like, Capecchi's behind. Vos is going to see it. And not a small gap either. Like properly out of the draft. Like on the gap. Capecchi's struggling. Vos is just going to relay immediately. And maybe she was cooked. Maybe she just had diamonds in her legs and knew she'd win the uphill drag and sprint. I don't know. But Vos takes a long time to relay. I thought the second she saw Capecchi off the wheel, she was going to just like full gas go because she's going to beat Van Nistelrooy in the sprint. Yep. And she does relay eventually, but Capecchi does close it down. But that's the big tell, that if Capecchi's struggling here on the flat, then the sprint finish, Vos is surely the favorite.
Yeah, no, I found it curious because I didn't expect Capecchi to be off the wheel. So I was like, is she bluffing now? But it wouldn't make sense to bluff at that point because you're actively self-sabotaging.
Because what if Vos just pulls?
Yeah, you're actively self-sabotaging yourself. And on top of that, what was weird is she then kind of closes it down, but then stays on like a few meters for a bit.
Yeah, she was cooked.
And when, who was the next to attack? So let me go to my notes here. Yeah, Longoborghini is the one that comes past and goes again. And then Capecchi has it to follow. Of course, Longoborghini's attacks are not that spicy anymore after all the attacks we've had already at this point. And Vos is in the wheel of Capecchi. And now Van Roy is gapped again. And now she's coming back. And now we're heading towards the final sprint. So we've had all these attacks, but the final sprint is coming. We know that Capecchi's shown some weakness in the last 2 kilometers. So I was like, I was kind of hoping Vos would win. This is her first edition of Omloop. Do you know that?
I didn't know that, but no, I was hoping that Van Nistelrooy would win.
Really?
The young rider.
I was on Voss's page because that would mean that
nice,
we've had...
It'd be nice to see Voss, but...
Because I want competition for the rest of the classics, and she has a sprint, while Van Nistelrooy has less of a sprint.
Coming into the final K, I knew Capecchi's not winning. I know that for sure. Capecchi can make Voss lose, and Trek can still win. And we saw this in Kerner last year with Van Hooydonk and Benoot. You can avoid a sprint up to the finish. Never give up. If you have the two worst sprinters in the group, Visma didn't last year, but Van Nistelrooy and ELB are the two worst sprinters in this group. Yes. Never give up playing the numbers, even late. It only takes Capecchi going to close it, being too cooked, and then letting the wheel go, and her and Vos looking at each other. That could have happened. I still think Trek could have won. But Van Nistelrooy, and I know they're cooked, I know they're max heart rate, but I don't think they should have given up on that because you're still going to come third. Your podium's guaranteed, whatever happens.
There's two ways they can do that, right? As in, they can roll attacks and keep going doing that. Longoborghini could have done another move, or Fernando could have done another move at that point. Or the other thing you can do is you lead out, but you stop too early, forcing your opponents to sprint too early. But neither of that happened, right?
If Van Nistelrooy stops here at 500 meters and just fully stops, the other two will freewheel. And if ELB gets some run into their wheels, she can get a gap and that's all you need. So I thought it was still possible. Van Nistelrooy, she leads out the whole time. Vos comes out of her wheel, jumps earlier, 200 to go, uphill drag. Look like her sprint at Gent-Wevelgem 21 and wins easily. She even stopped at 50 meters to go to look behind her. To see, are you still there? Saw Capecchi was still there. And she sprinted again and put another bike length gap in. So Vos is boss. Yep. Looks like she's back. Looks so good on the climbs. Wins the sprint in dominant fashion. And takes a big win ahead of the world champion, Lotta Capecchi, who's looked unassailable in one-day races like this for the last year and a half. ELB third with Trek taking fourth as well with Van Nistelrooy. So they did... I thought Trek did a pretty good job. They really were the animators of this final. So kudos to little Trek, two riders. Talita de Jong on Lotto Destiny takes fifth in an uphill sprint against Vollering, the 30-year-old. She's in 23. She's been nowhere really in the last 2 years. So that's her best result in quite a while. And then Nuvi Domes 7th, Pietersen 8th. Vibers was then, they were a minute back, by the way. Vibers on 153, and Balsamo won the big bunch sprint ahead of Norsgaard for the top 10 position. So two really good races, Benji. And the women's, it was kind of good because there wasn't too much action pre the men's finishing. It seemed a pretty status quo affair with a breakaway and Steelworks pacing. And then all that action in the final 30Ks was really, really good.
Yeah, it was a great race. It was a great last 35-ish kilometers. And I don't know, it's a bit chaotic for me, the women's race being after the men's race and having to handle both races very close together, because I'm still, when the men's race finishes, I would need like some time to like mentally recover before watching another race, even though like I wouldn't be able to watch like any other race like in the next half an hour with like fully full attention. But it was like, it was actually a good race, so that makes it so much better, you know. So I don't know, it improves broadcasting numbers to have the women's race finish after the men's race, but I feel like it's a lot of mental pressure on the viewer at least for me.
And I think just not having Capecchi right away on the Mur, I was like, holy shit, this is so good.
And also,
nothing against her, but I want to see some competition here.
Not just her, the fact that Wiebes wasn't close, the fact that Vollering wasn't showing like S-tier level form either. They're probably going to get better, unfortunately. Well, yeah. Fortunately for them, but unfortunately
she still came
for
second.
Like, in Strade, we might see a pretty damn good race in Strade. By the time we hit Paris-Roubaix, I'm expecting Kopecky to clean that. As a Belgian man, I hope so.
You're
going to
jinx it again. Dude, they're cursed in that race.
They did it to himself, so it's not a curse.
Well, I mean, yeah. But that was a really, really good opening, start to opening weekend. Tomorrow, is there a women's Kerner?
There's a Dwarsdorp Hageland. How do I know? Because I actually forgot that Dwarsdorp Hageland existed on the day of Kuurne, but when I came from the UK to Belgium, Brussels Airport has a horrible bike system, as in I always have to wait like 45 minutes to an hour before my bike arrives. I was standing there with a Hess cycling.
Faster they have it cyclist. out before the normal luggage.
Yeah, true. And I was there with Holly from Hess Cycling, a fellow cyclist, but I'm obviously not a cyclist.
A fellow
cycling person. She's racing Dwarsdorp Hageland, so
okay.
That's how I was reminded.
But the big guns aren't doing it like Voss and Capecchi, I don't believe.
BTRSD works, Balsamo's there, I think.
Okay, Balsamo probably the favorite in that case. Otherwise, around the traps, Jonas Vingegaard didn't want Castrillo to win in the breakaway in El Gran Camino, and he rode away on basically a nothing climb, the Poggio, and did big, big numbies, and also a crazy descent. So I got to go watch that descent. Probably the Visma directors who are focused on Omloop will be looking at that descent for the tour, being like, oh my God. In the wet Galicia's full scent. He dropped Castrillo on the descent, but maybe he's not Basque, so he doesn't have the descending ability.
Can we talk about the fact that a few days in a row now we see attacks from Vingegaard, Carapaz, Bernal in the breakaway formation phase?
Yeah, let's go.
How? Why? Why are they doing that?
KOM.
KOM?
Dude, Vingegaard hasn't won KOM at El Gran Camino before. So maybe he has last year's. He's got to pick it up, pick up his act. He wins that stage and he'll probably win tomorrow as well. It's like a 10% finish. And he looks a bit too good there. Fornadesh Classic, Ayuso, very, very strong sprint. Put Gregoire, Schielmoser and Gull on a gap in the finish there, which is very, very impressive knowing their flat sprint. Schielmoser is no slouch himself and Gregoire we know. So big win for Ayuso. I got to catch that back up. But that's encouraging for him. And UAE Tour, Tim Merlier, I did watch this one.
Yep.
He is the best there. He was getting pretty shitty draft for the last 500 meters. He was having to sprint up into position. And then he just opens up early off Siriza, who was thinking about, ooh, do I put you in the barriers? And he didn't, thank God. He straightened up eventually. I know it is a chicane. So the sprinters do get induced to take the straight line, which isn't actually holding their line. But yeah, Merle is just too good. And he beats Decline, another second place. Bauhaus third, Fratin fourth, Siritza fifth. And Coy and Welser didn't get it right today. So they're out of the top 10. So Merle just, he looks the best guy outside of Philipsen, who we haven't seen except in a non-sprint race today. But we'll maybe see Philipsen tomorrow. We'll see them ahead against each other in, I think, Paris-Nice or Tirreno. I believe they're going head-to-head there. So that'll be really nice to see. But that's it, Benji. We'll be back with Kona tomorrow. Where will we see a sprint? I'm actually much more hopeful tomorrow for a very close race. So I think today bodes well for that. I hope you enjoyed our coverage of the opening of Omloped Nieuwsblad. And we'll see you with Kona tomorrow. Until then, ciao.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.